that quite that adventurous. If I can write you a note or send you a book or something, okay, that's fine, but I really don't have to travel that much.
Yeah, it gets a little bit strange.
Well, you had made a note that you travel like 83,000 miles by air?
So far this year.
Just this year?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What's your record for an annual?
I don't know. I don't know, because not all of it, I mean, you know, not all of it shows up as on the frequent flyer account.
Yeah, yeah, because you have other side trips, et cetera, in addition to...
Well, you use award travel, you're still in the air, but, you know, it's not, you're just living off the frequent flyer. So we're going to Italy. When we do the Italy trip, that's all frequent flyer
miles. Oh, how fun. Oh, so, again, that's the person. Now,
Hi there.
Hello there.
Who we got on the phone?
Peter Troutman, how are you?
Hey, Peter Troutman.
You got me and five of my servers and a couple of floor managers.
Oh, that's great.
Terrific.
The gang from the Cape is here.
I'm going to put them on speakerphone so they can listen. I'll make sure it doesn't annoy things too much.
Okay.
I think we did it last week.
Yeah, if you guys start to get rowdy, you know, we're going to have to ask them to leave.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay, how are we doing?
Better.
Are we good?
Did you guys get started yet or not?
We were just kind of chatting about the tyranny of frequent flyer miles.
Oh.
Which is the story of my life, I think. Although Italy is, if you got to go someplace, Italy works.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, my goodness.
We got space over there, guys, if you want to come.
Loads. Mr. Troutman, is that was your last name?
Yes.
My name is Paul Paz. I just wanted to introduce myself quickly. You have 5 years staff, though, you said?
We actually just finished listening to your CD.
Oh, okay. All right. Terrific. Good. Good. Yeah. Man, isn't it terrific what they can do on voiceovers now?
Absolutely. Yeah. I had to dub like crazy to get you to sound intelligent, Paul. So.
Now, you're located in the Cape, Northeast
Cape, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. I'm out here in beautiful the Portland, Oregon area. We have good weather coming your way, so there, a little gift from the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, great.
I wish we had rain we could send. We need that badly. Well, I'll toss it to you, Peter, because that's, you got the gang there, and while we have the time, we'll...
I know one of the things that I was interested in was hearing a little bit about the restaurant that you're currently working in.
For myself, Peter?
Yeah.
I work for a company currently called Pacific Coast Restaurants. They're about 17 years old. I just finished my 10-year anniversary with them, in February. I celebrated my 21-year anniversary as a career waiter, by choice, just this past Saturday. Our company, has about 22 different units. We have a mix of themes that we offer. Our flagship or our biggest group would be the Newport Bays. Our next grouping would be the Stanford Restaurant and Bars. That's the organization that I work with. We're a casual, upscale establishment, a very mixed menu of both primarily beef, steak, seafood, pastas, salads, a very American menu, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Check average. Dinners run around 18, 19, lunch 9 to 10. I think about, I worked last night, for example, and I did about a four-hour shift. It was relatively quiet because our restaurant is very subject to good weather, believe it or not. When it's nice, people are attracted to the water, and we are far away from water. So I did probably about $750 in sales last night. The company itself, we just recently exceeded $65 million in gross sales.
Wow.
We have 1,400 employees in total. We're primarily Western United States. We are an Oregon-based company. We only recently moved out of Oregon probably about 4 or 5 years ago. But the bulk of our facilities are within the state of Oregon.
Is that more information than you wanted?
No, that's perfect.
Am I hired? Well, I think it's kind of interesting. In fact, I do wait tables for the company. I'm one of their trainers as well, one of several trainers. We have a number of them because of the size of our organization. The first and foremost, my professional interest is I wait tables. I take care of people. And that's my primary role with that company. It's no more or less than your associates have.
Some of my servers want to know how many nights a week you work.
Currently...
You're obviously on the lecture circuit and, to some degree. And
I'm
familiar with your website. And
oh, okay, terrific, yes, yeah. I currently work 3 days a week. I work doubles. I work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I work splits, lunch and dinner.
Wow.
And that is my fixed schedule. And now, again, one of the perks of the business, of the profession, is if you're broke, you pick up shifts. If you want to go fishing, like I'm going tomorrow, you give up a shift.
Familiar.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, again, that's one of the benefits of the profession.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and I've been actually a single dad for my entire career. My children are older now. I'm an old slow waiter now. I'm 53. Interestingly enough, my two of my three children, one is a bartender and one is a waiter. And they inquired initially a few years back about working with me, and I went, bad chance and no way. I'll be more than happy to lend you my advice and guidance and materials, but working together, hey, we live together. That'd be way too much stress with family. Now, are most of your staff been with you for a while?
I would say generally we tend to keep people here a lot longer than most places.
Excellent, excellent. So you obviously offer some things that nobody else, or if anything, you must treat your staff pretty well. That's probably the biggest reason people leave is they're just not happy where they're at. It's not always money.
Yeah, I think in general we have an atmosphere that tends to be a place people want to stick around.
Excellent, fabulous. That's good for everybody. That consistency is what the guests ultimately are looking for. If you have a lot of turnover, that consistency gets lost.
Yeah.
Pierre, I don't know how that worked for you, but I found it real interesting when I was talking with Paul originally. We did the original interview. It really kind of flagged a few attitudes that I guess I had about servers that I didn't really think about. In that, you know, the way that he approaches things is a lot different than most of the servers in my experience.
As far as the employer's approach to the employees?
Well, no, just the way you think, which is really...
Oh, you mean myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it just sort of caught me on a few things. I said, whoa, I better pay more attention because I'm making some assumptions here without being aware that I'm making assumptions.
Yeah, I think one of the dilemmas with the industry in general, it's interesting, I did an interview about a week and a half ago with Nation's Restaurant News on that same subject about the difficulty with that within the industry itself, sometimes the wait staff doesn't get the respect that they deserve. Just on a pure product knowledge level that is demanded of a career or a professional waiter is phenomenal, and I think that reflected just on any, if you were to go to any food show, and if you saw all the various products and systems and services, either existing and incoming new products and services, that at some point some waiter has to know about that. At some point a waiter has to know how to use that, how to explain it to a guest, how to present it to a guest. So you have to be... To be successful in this, you have to be very, very intelligent. You have to be able to think very, very quickly on your feet. And I think above all, one of those attitudes that I've assumed is I really have to think from the perspective that I'm in business for myself. My employer gives me a tremendous amount of resources to work with, and how far I take those is really an individual choice.
I'd be curious, actually, to see what kind of questions your crew had.
Yes.
I have a question. Actually.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. touched on something you said in that CD interview.
Mm-hmm.
Something about when you were beginning and you decided that you wanted to be a waiter. You said something about making yourself accountable.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was just wondering if you could talk about that.
Sure. I guess that that accountability was a matter of just accepting the fact that I decided to do this. I don't do this because I lack ambition or because I'm not intelligent or lack education or drive. I decided to do this because I like it. And I discovered that what a fortunate combination I had of not only liking the profession, but also discovering that you can make a very serious living at this. in light of that, rather than, and I've seen this happen way too many times, I'm sure in-house you've had menu changes, be it food or beverage. And a lot of times we senior staff will go, okay, all right, yeah, well, we've got it all covered. Well, we talk the game, but do you walk the game? And the question is, do you take the time to make yourself familiar with the product changes, with the menu spec changes, with service changes? Do you, all employers and all professionals boast of the fact that, you know, we take this very serious and we're very conscientious and we watch every step, but do you actually practice that? And that's the difference between, I think, great waiters and mediocre and average. I think that's what makes the difference between great employers and very, very successful restaurants is just that fact, walking the talk versus just talking the talk.
There's also another, I think there's another piece of it, at least one that I got out of it. I'm not sure if that's what you had in mind when we were talking about it, but that was a realization that nobody's responsible for your success but you.
That's it. Absolutely.
And that,
absolutely,
you know,
yeah,
that it's a case of getting serious about it, about not accepting any excuses like, well, gee, you know, it's a slow night. And,
oh, absolutely,
you know,
sure. Sure.
Want to talk about that just a little bit?
Well,
is that okay? Because that's kind of along the line.
Oh, yeah, no. Matter of fact, as Bill knows, I do kind of a monthly newsletter that I send out, and my most recent piece had to do with working with call customers and why they are so important. And a very, very good associate of mine, Sherry, just amazes me at the number of call customers we have. There are evenings where we'll give up tables so that she can get, because we have so many, there are so many people waiting to sit in her station. But what is fantastic about her is that in her professional sense, she still attacks these guests with animated hospitality and a real genuine sense of interest. Equally, she shares the wealth, and that as her tables are turning, she makes sure that those that have given up tables to, you know, take care of her call customers, myself, for example, I'll give up a table. She'll make sure I get a table back to square it off. But the important thing about her dealing with her call customers is the fact that once she cultivated them, that she made sure they were always top priority. And the only person that could do that was her. But it was a matter of the employer providing her the space to run the business and the materials, the products to do it, and then her following up with it. Maybe a shorter version of that would be the fact that when your guest asks you, what kind of Merlots do you have? Well, if you don't know what Merlots you have or have no idea even how to use the menu as a tool with the guest, the manager or the boss or the sommelier is not going to run out there and say, oh, well, here, step aside. Let me explain what the wines are for the guests. That's totally up to the waiter to decide how far they want to go with it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that does.
Yeah. Now, and how long have you been a waiter yourself?
I've been a waiter for probably, 3 years on and off.
Okay.
As a student.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. One of my associates I was talking with the other day, and actually a student, young man, early 20s, doing well in school. We were chatting the other day, and he made reference to the fact that he didn't want to be waiting tables part-time for his entire life. He wanted to finish school and get it done. And I took a moment with him. I said, well, let's think about this part-time idea. If you look at what we do and the potential income that one can make, out here in Oregon, if I can make the same amount of money in 20 hours that the average worker in Oregon can make in 40 hours, why should I want to do it in 40 if I can do it in 20? In that same vein, my associate started thinking, and he goes, you know what, part-time last year, part-time is a concept because he only works 20 hours. But he says, part-time, I made almost $40,000 a year last year. I went, okay, so you graduate from college. And I'm not trying to discourage a formal education. What I'm trying to emphasize is the opportunity, is the fact that if at a part-time basis at 20 hours a week, this young fellow's making 40 big ones, hey, that means if you want to make 80, you work 40 hours a week. And there's not a whole lot of college programs, where you can finish a two-week waiter training program or maybe a year's on-the-job training and have the opportunity to make that kind of money. Just, a tremendous opportunity. And it always falls back, I believe, on the individual and how far you want to go with it. Not everybody's as psycho as I am about it. and nor do you have to be. But I think given the opportunity, economically, both in, and there's the immediate feedback that you get from the guests themselves. That it makes you, when you do a good job, you feel good, and you get that from a look. You get that from the obviously from the gratuities that we make. We get that from comment cards. We get that from them verbally acknowledging our a job well done. There's an endless list of pluses about being a professional waiter.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually in a professional job for a while, and
mm-hmm.
one of the things that got me thinking back to the restaurant was the kind of thing where the more you're willing to work, the more you can make.
Oh, I mean, right. I look at back in your. I know out here we have a thing in Portland called the Saturday Market, and the Saturday Market is it's like the where the little craftsmen come out there on the weekends and they sell their little widgets. And they gather at a certain location here in town. I don't know if they have anything like that back there at the Cape. But as I said in my tape, that from a professional job, the only thing that's different is the attitude. My office, I still have an office. It's just that it's four tables now instead of one desk. And the neat thing is like that small entrepreneur, is I'm in charge of everything that happens there. And I decide, again, how far I'm going to go with it. The effort that I try and present, I'm always looking for a way where I can surprise the guest with something that they didn't expect. Bill and I have talked about this. I carry a little credit card-sized plastic magnifying glass. And when my guests are having difficulty reading, I pull this thing out, and they are just tickled. This silly thing cost me 99 cents. And I did it initially to solve a problem. Subsequently, what I've discovered is that when I get the guest, when I pull this silly thing out and they go, oh, gee, when I hear that, oh, gee, I'm having a good time. They're having a good time. And that's also turning into a real income. And all it is solving problems, pretty much being hospitable, being nice to folks.
Sounds like fun to me.
Oh, God, unbelievably fun. Now, you folks are moving into your summer season?
Yeah, it should be starting soon. After the end of May, it usually kind of picks up a lot.
Yeah.
Right through into the fall.
Yeah, like that. Did you have to beef up your staff to bring them up to par for your increase?
We have a pretty full year-round staff.
Wonderful.
We elaborate on different positions, like probably bus people and things like that.
Yes.
Right. I do have a question for you.
Sure.
Myself, I've been in the restaurant business for about 18 years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just wondering, now that you've been in it for over 20, have you given any thought to what you're going to do as you get older as far as, your finances for when you retire and that kind of thing?
You know, it's very interesting because that's a great question, too. One of the things I've heard from my younger associates many times is they will say, well, gee, I don't make any money doing this. All I make is minimum wage. And I go, now, wait a minute. Hold it. Part of the difficulty with my associates many times is not that they don't make enough money. It's that they make cash money and they don't keep track of it. And they don't budget themselves. I, too, over the years have been subject to, I finished the shift. So, hey, let's all go down and have a brewski, a little wind down after work. And the next day, I'm counting my tips. I'm going, whoa, what happened? Where did it go? It's a matter of budgeting your money. And if you are an extremely high-end restaurant where you make outrageously big tips, or if you're just a little cafe, if you don't budget your cash income effectively, you're never going to make enough money. The ability to set up IRAs, my company offers a 401k, so I got myself involved with that. That's been a resource. But what I finally did is I started looking for ways in which, for long-term purposes, I needed to find ways where I could pay myself. And I know because of the way the tax situation works, declarations of tips, etc., there are times when I will have to, on payday, I have to issue a check to my 401k. And some people, well, geez, that's a bum deal. No, I'm paying that money to myself. And as any executive would do running a business, the first person you want to make sure gets paid is you.
Yeah, I know one thing for myself is, I'm really pretty meticulous about keeping track of exactly what I make every
you
day.
You betcha, kind of yeah.
But, we just recently started here. I call it a simple like a simple IRA,
uh-huh.
which is the real basic thing, but I just wanted to know, you know, how maybe you felt about that.
Oh, yeah. Any way, shape, or form that you can start saving for yourself, you want to do it. And, you know, that really doesn't have anything to do with what kind of work you do. That's one of those things you really want to start up front on. And I know when I first got into the 401k and the deductions and the additional monies I may have had to pay or appeared that I had to pay, it affected my cash flow, certainly. But once I realized that that cash flow or that change was nothing less than a matter of me paying myself first, then it was all worth it. It was like, you know, I would just tell myself, I'm writing this check to me. The money that I'd see that I wasn't getting in my pocket was going someplace else, but it was going in on my into something on my behalf. And you have to start that right away. I think it's also in that process, and I'm not sure the particular savings plan that you were referring to. I'm not exactly the exact financial details of how that works. But that also pays off for us in the long run when we start developing a paper trail of income. Mm-hmm. Then we start qualifying for home loans. Then we start qualifying for, you know, just car loans at large, getting lines of credit for Social Security purposes and accumulating those benefits for unemployment purposes and having that to fall back on if you need it. Declaring your income, really, it's a plus. It works for you. It does not work against you.
Okay, great.
If anything works against you, if you don't declare or declare correctly, and Uncle Sam wants to come after you, now you're going to pay through the nose. Now you're going to have a problem.
That's true.
That's not worth the hassle. I know too many people have been through that. Is there anybody else there that has other family members working in the business besides themselves?
Yes. Our restaurant's owned by two brothers, and the younger gentleman that you just spoke to earlier, he's also part of the family.
Oh, okay, all right. So it's a very family-dominated operation then.
Yeah, and a lot of us have been here for more than, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 years.
Yes, yeah.
As long as, you know, 10 almost.
Yeah. So you kind of grew up into it. Well, it's interesting because, you know, yours is family-owned and there's an investment there, I find, in my particular situation with myself and my children. While we have not owned a company, we as a family certainly contribute to the image and the success of the hospitality industry at large. I think it's a, where, in your case, again, where it's family run, there's obviously a particular incentive for the continuation of the business. I find in my circumstance, I am just amazingly complimented that my two boys would decide that, you know, this works and this is what I'm going to do. One of them is going to school and the other one keeps flip-flopping back and forth in school. We were talking, someone I was talking earlier about a moment ago about the ability to put money aside for yourself. I've helped all my kids go to college. My daughter graduated from University of Oregon in 97, is aiming now going for a master's, so I'm pitching a few pennies her way to get that done. Again, the personal fulfillment, the professional fulfillment, the economic fulfillment that I have, and being able to take care of my family as a waiter, just economically. I am very proud of the results that have come out of my individual effort. Now, I don't want to sound so arrogant that, gee, I did this all by myself. It took a lot of people over several years to share a lot of experiences with me to where I got to the stage that I'm at. And I'm still learning. I mean, the business is so ever-changing, you never learn everything about this business. And that's also what keeps it fresh.
Now, it seemed to me that one of the problems, it may not be quite the word, but one of the things that makes it difficult for people to really settle into this idea that, you know, because I think being a server is probably one of the best kept secrets out there.
Oh, amen.
A big problem is just the general attitude of your peers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
About, you know, the idea, well,
I'm just a waiter.
Yeah, and,
oh,
know,
yeah.
Do it till I get a real job kind of thing.
Yeah.
And certainly you face some of that.
Yes, I do.
In making the shift. Do you want to just, I mean, how do you get through that with your sanity intact without just telling everybody to go and screw off?
I think part of it is you've got to stay focused on what your task is. And the task is it's nothing less than hospitality. I mean, and it's so simple, it's absurd. We essentially get paid to be nice to people. It takes some technical and mechanical knowledge to make that happen. You certainly got to be able to orchestrate yourself. But having it, it's so simple. I guess people kind of overlook it because it is so simple. It's, the job is not worthy unless it's tremendously complicated. Well, I did that for 10 years. I had that complicated professional job, and I didn't like it. It made me crazy. And I go back to, as you said, and we'll try and keep it a secret as much as we can. This is the neatest job I've ever had in my life. And my associates who come in with that attitude of, well, you know, I'm just a waiter. This, it's just food. You know, I mean, what's the problem? Why is the guest all upset? It's no big deal. Why should I have to come in with a clean shirt? Why should I use an iron? Or why should I take, or, you know, why should I polish my shoes? That is very definitely reflected in the kind of money that they make. You'll also find those same people are get thrashed psychologically when they don't get the money they think, the tip they think they deserve. They just go completely berserk. And as I've always said, I've been stiffed myself, and there are reasons that that happens, and it will happen again. But I've always looked at my shifts as a matter of, you know, if I go home with more money than what I showed up with, I had a hell of a good shift. Because I'm winning. I definitely am. But, yeah, I've found some of my peers who are very experienced, and not just people new to the business, have never made that transition of, you know, I'm professional. That this has taken care of a lot of things for me economically, provided for me, but still have not come to terms with the fact that this is a professional career choice. This is not something that they were just ultimately left with that they had to do. It was all they could do. And I know when I do my presentations, a lot of my writing keys off of that fact, that this is a very good job. This is a great career choice. One of the interesting things that I find very, very exciting about the hospitality industry at large is that you can choose to do what myself and many of my associates have done and make this a very fun career and very profitable career. Or if you choose to make a change, you can become an owner. And there's not a whole lot of businesses in this country right now where you can make that kind of transition. So it's always a non-ending opportunity. The people that never get over the hump, I don't know that they would be happy no matter what they chose to do.
So well, just
I did have a question. You actually started talking about it, but it's kind of a variation on what you talked about.
Sure.
You obviously were very goal-oriented when you worked on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I still work on the floor.
Oh,
yeah, you betcha. I'm older and I'm slower, but I still work the floor.
Okay, so, well, you work now with your consulting and motivating. When you are on the floor, do you have you found any effective techniques, or do you even bother pay any attention to kind of instilling that same attitude in your coworkers?
Yes, yeah, I do actually. But I know if I had to work with myself and I was always touting how you have to change your attitude, I get tired of listening to that. To be honest, too, I think that the role that I play with my employer, which is not a formal role, but it's a role that comes because of my outside interests and everybody's familiar with it, it is the example I set. And it really is how I conduct myself in my station with my guests, how I conduct myself with my peers, how I conduct myself with my bosses, my managers, my supervisors, my corporate people. And when I'm at work and I'm on the clock, my role is I am an employee of a great company, and we offer great products, and I have some fantastic guests to take care of, and I'm going to find every way, hook or crook, to make it happen for that guest. I know when some of my accomplishments started becoming a little more well-known among my peers, I would get some teasing of, oh, it's Mr. Big Shot. And I understand why that would happen, but I have strive very, very carefully not to tout those particular opportunities and accomplishments while I'm working on the clock. I'm there like everybody else. I think one of the things, and it's interesting, we all want respect, personally and professionally. I think the only way to get that is you got to treat people with respect. You're not going to get it unless you give it out. I am animate about please and thank yous. in how I conduct myself with my guests and my peers. Another thing, which some people think is kind of odd, but I think is absolutely fantastic. You know how our industry is notorious for the incredible back-of-the-house language that can happen out of the sounds of the game. Oh, I hear the laughing. You guys know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Well, one of the things that we do, and which makes my professional environment so much pleasurable, is our company does not tolerate that. When you're off the clock, you can talk any way you want. But when we're on the clock, we're professional here. We're professional, and we start with exactly how we address one another. And we don't use cursing. And if anybody does, man, they're pulled over to the side going, no, you don't do this here. You don't do this here. This is not how we talk to one another. Yes, there we still have stress. Yes, we have crashes, either equipment or no-shows or front and back of the house. And, yes, we still have personality conflicts. We still have those. But I think what is a real favorable environment created by the employer and sustained by the employees is how we just talk to one another.
Was that the policy when you first came there, or
Absolutely.
Was that something that was instituted while you were there?
No, no. That was how this company has always run their business. Are you familiar with Bob Farrell, Farrell's Ice Cream Parlors, Give Him the Pickle book?
No.
Big guy out here in the West Coast. He started Farrell's Ice Cream Parlors. God, this is back in the 50s, 60s-ish. I'm sure Bill is familiar with their organization.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, well, Mr. Farrell, who is just a, he's retired from the organization now, but he had a lot to do with the Pacific Coast Restaurants organization really taking off. But he is also, he is my mentor. I have I've read about him, God, probably 15 years ago, and I always thought, gee, what would it be like to work for somebody like that? And here I am. I ended up working with him. And he really emulates my own philosophy on how you conduct yourself at work. And you do it with respect. What's his famous, his line was, it's almost a religious one, but he says, as you serve, so shall you prosper. And essentially that is true. What we do is we serve others, and the better you do it, the better you prosper. And that's, again, it sounds so desperately simple, but that really is the crux of it. I know there's days when I show up for work, and you know what? I don't feel like being there. Or maybe I've got some drama going on in my life, and somehow I've got to refresh myself as I cross that threshold, as I step on stage, as I come into the building. I've got to leave that stuff outside, because that is going to impact my interaction with my peers, my interaction with the guests, is going to impact my income. Several years ago, 11 years ago, my oldest son had Paul. Paul is, what, 28 now? 29. He had a bone marrow transplant. He had Hodgkin's disease, which is cancer of the lymph system. He was extremely ill, very, very ill. Ironically, one of the things that my profession gave to me under that circumstance in which I had no control over my son's illness, and we were all just out on a limb and waiting to see what was going to happen, was the fact that I could go to work, and in my office at my four tables, I was in charge of what happened there. I could make it as favorable as an experience for myself personally as I possibly chose. When I left the building, my son was still sick, and I still had those desperate feelings and all the anxiety went with it. But part of my therapy, believe it or not, was going to work and being a waiter and spreading joy, which sounds maybe overstated, but I mean, I feel good when I can make people laugh. I feel good when I make people feel pleasantly, when they are received pleasantly. That when I can give them a look of, hey, I'm glad you're here, or when they ask a question. So it's like the wonderful waiter's favorite question: can we have separate checks? How many times have your guests asked you that question, and their tone is so apologetic? Think about that. There are those that just demand it, but the majority of them are that little soft. Gosh, is it okay if we ask for separate checks? And you know my answer: big, bright face, nice smile, great smiles in the eyes as well. You know what? We're the only country that got a man on the moon. And I have some colleagues, and I'm going to figure that out for you. Not a problem. Let me do that for you. And those little things like separate checks that we sometimes are tempted to make a crisis over, that's not a crisis. That's cake. That's nothing to it. I haven't shared that particular aspect of my life with a whole lot of people, so now you're privileged to some information on me. How's that?
Terrific.
Any other questions for the other folks? Now, what's your? I'm just curious on your age spread for your wait staff.
Oh, let's see. We have from 24 up to 52.
Okay. Ooh, 52. One of my pals. I think, you know, I think that, that one of the pleasures of my work is also my peers, my associates, and so many things that they offer me in their attitudes. I mean, with all this glory, if you will, about me having a positive attitude and passing on to my my peers that I work with, a lot of times working with the people I work with make me laugh. They are hilarious. I enjoy their creativity and their professional manner. I mean, I think back in my insurance days a long time ago, I used to stress when I was driving to work, going, oh, my God, I don't want to go to work. I'm going to be dealing with nothing but trouble and these office people, and I hate them. And I honestly and truly look forward to going to work and working with my associates. They are fresh. They are of all the same age spread as you folks, although at my store I'm the old guy. But working with people who are my children's age, I mean, they come in with such energy. I look at our host staff, which is very, very young. Some of them are in high school. And no, they don't know everything about restaurants. And sometimes they get a little bit distracted by other silly things and aren't being professional, if you will. But what they bring is positive energy. And I know this, we just hired this young fellow, Steve, and he's just a kick, but he's not polished yet. And so we're busting off a table that just left. There's a lot of guests sitting around us. And he's kind of boisterous young, and he goes, hey, man, those guys are really cool. I said, you know, you're right, and I really enjoy your excitement. I said, but our guests that are around here now, they didn't come here to listen to us getting kind of loud and sassy. You know, let's wait till we get to the back, and we'll talk that way. But out here, we got to kind of keep it a little more formal. So it wasn't a matter of me giving him that old man look of, hey, you silly kid, you know, settle down. Because you don't want to lose the energy. You've got to have that positive energy. Because it takes a lot of energy to do this kind of work, and especially work in a group like that. But it's good to hear that you guys have the same kind of mixes that I work with as well. But that, I think also that's the other fun thing about our profession of choice, is that age really doesn't have a difference. If anything has a difference, attitude has a difference. And attitude is a choice.
And old and crafty will beat young and adventurous every time, right?
That's right. But still, you know, many of the skills that I've acquired as a waiter and perceptions of the public and the job, I learned from somebody else. Somebody had to show those to me. I didn't just wake up one day and say, oh, gosh, now I really love this job and I know everything there is about it. I have plagiarized at least 75% of everything I've ever learned about this business. I always love, I mean, those of us, we all dine out ourselves. I get such a charge out of watching a professional waiter work their craft, ply their trade, somebody who's good. And, man, mentally, I'm taking notes left and right. I'm going to steal every little bit that I can learn from my associates, and I want to take it right to my tables.
What's the best idea you got recently?
I'm sorry?
What's the best idea you found recently?
Well, we were talking, it was on that tape, and that was that wine thing. We did a wine change on our menu, and it was just one of the waitresses, who actually she's studying to be an accountant, so I guess that's why she figured that out. But she was looking at the wine list, and she goes, hey, this is how you sell this. And it was just the order and how you announced it versus just throwing out wine. It's on that tape, but more specifically, it had to do with Merlots. And we currently offer a French Merlot and a California Merlot and one from Washington State. Well, all she did was change the order. She said, when the guests ask about a Merlot, you say, oh, well, we have a very nice French, and then we have a good California, and then, of course, there's Washington, which is, it's a subtle hint, like there's a difference in quality. There's a difference in flavor. They're all good quality. But somehow the guests think that the last one is the cheapest one, so they order that, and it ends up being the most expensive one. So it's just, it's trickery. Well, it's not trickery, because the prices of the wines are right there on the menu. But the way people will, when they ask about appetizers on the menu, and how some of my peers will either, it's almost like poking a pig with a stick, they'll just kind of grunt. I'm going, no, that ain't going to take you no place. Or watching some of my peers who use such adjectives about the descriptions and become so just immensely animated. And when they describe these products to the guests, I'm going, geez, I've eaten this myself 1,000 times. I think I'll order another one today just because I heard the way you described it. It's the people that I have worked with, especially where I'm at now. They're just terrific. I just can't tell you how much I enjoy working with these folks. And I got a great set of managers, too. They make a huge difference.
Terrific. Well, what any what other questions do we have over there? Because this is really here for you, not for Paul and I to sit around and chat at each other. We do that occasionally.
Is everybody there have access to the internet? Do you have access to the internet in the office?
Yeah, we do.
All right. If I may suggest, I have a website, which some of you apparently have looked at. There's a lot of material on there for reading and that you can use for training, that you can pull off and use at shift meetings. I welcome you to go in there and glean whatever you want. It don't cost you a nickel. There's that thing I talked about, the Saturday market theory of waiting tables. There's another fun one titled Smiles, the Eyes Have It. There's one kind of a personal item. It's called Daddy the Waiter. And it kind of talks about, gee, why did I do this? Why have I decided to do this for 21 years?
Well, one of your kids wrote that, didn't they?
Pardon me?
Did one of your kids write that?
It came from something that happened with one of my children.
Yeah.
That's where that came from. And this is when one of them was back in the fourth grade. This is a few years ago. And it was the School Careers Awareness Week. And he wrote something about his dad being a waiter. It totally blew me away. Still does when I think about it.
Yeah.
It was such a truly, for me personally, an earth-shaking, eye-opening, going, you know what? What I do is full of dignity, and it will be as professional. It'll only be as professional as I decide to make it. If I wait for somebody else to tell me I'm professional, I'll be discouraged left and right. I have to decide. I think all of us, we have to decide, hey, this is my career of choice, and I am good at it. And I don't want to sound like the Saturday Night Live guy, you know, and I like me, but
yeah.
It pretty much boils down to that. That's desperately important. You can't wait for other people to give you approval. I think a lot of my opportunities that have come for me have been personally through this kind of a tenacious challenge of when people told me, you know, you can't do this, Paul. You can't be a waiter. If you do this now, I go back 20 years ago, you do this now, you're going to be irresponsible for doing that. And I'm going, no, I'm not. I kept telling myself, I'm not irresponsible. And yes, I'm a single dad. And yes, I got these kids. And yes, I'm going broke, but I'll figure it out. And I did. And again, the fact that my children have emulated my particular career of choice, it was ironic because when they all decided they were, or the two boys going, well, we're going to wait tables. I'm going, I flinched. I went, ooh. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. I mean,
gotcha.
I said, now, wait a minute. I had to say it to myself. I go, wait a minute, what are you getting all fool off about here? I mean, that's what you did. So as I emphasize with them, if that's what you want to do, then don't do it half-baked. Be good at it. Be absolutely find all kinds of ways to be unique at it, make it fun.
Well, I think that is a point, and maybe that's one that we can, if everybody has covered, then we're about getting close to the time I asked you to contribute
sure,
to this today,
mentioned.
But that you can be professional at this even if you don't say this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
This isn't who you are. This is what you do for a living.
That's right.
But
right.
How you do it is a statement about who you are.
That's what counts. I remember, you know, I don't know if you folks there are familiar with who Herman Cain is. He's the past president of the National Restaurant Association a few years back. Well, not that long ago. But I had a wonderful opportunity to meet him. He's just a fabulous speaker if you ever got the chance to listen to him. But we had a brief conversation, and we had had some correspondence prior to our meeting. But he said that very, very same thing to me. He put it in much richer terms. He goes, "Yes, well, my grandmother used to tell me, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. What counts is, are you any good at it? You've got to be good at it." And that's how you, the perspective and the approach you want to take. And I can't possibly agree any more, any less with him. That's exactly what you want to do. So everybody's working tonight?
Yes.
Now, come on, a little joy here, a little joy. Well, let's see, what time is it there? It's got to be like 5, 6-ish there?
Yeah, quarter.
So you guys getting busy now? Or on the edge, or you got to get set up?
We're starting.
Well, you know, it's such a pleasure to have you guys take the time to come and visit with me. I'm very, very honored that you would do that.
Well, can I ask you one question?
Oh, please, yes.
Do you have pre-shift huddles?
Yes, every single shift, lunch and dinner. We're only open for lunch. Yeah, and you do them for 1 or 2 minutes, not real long.
And who conducts
the... Usually the manager on duty for the shift will conduct it. I'm not sure if with your internal structure, if you need to change it a little bit differently. Could be anybody, really, you know, one of your key people, or even one of your new people. And the subject matter can be anything.
But can you tell me about, like, one... specific one that, you know.
Sure. One of the things that we do not have bussers. So the wait staff run their own food as a team. So the team running of food. There is the constant, make sure you are going through the steps of service, and we'll repeat them. Mm-hmm. We will take certain items off the menu, be it a food or a beverage item, and ask one of the wait staff to describe it for the rest of the group. Especially if, and when you do that, we usually try to find somebody that does a good job with it so the others can copy that.
How many seats in the restaurant?
We have just under 300. It's a pretty good size.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I figured out, Coach, I'm old. This is how crazy I am. I figured out one time that the table farthest away from our service area for the wait staff, round trip, is over 60 yards. So in consolidating strips, steps and staying organized, if you forget to ask the guests if they want cream with their coffee and you come back, that's 120 yards for coffee and cream. So keep yourself organized.
How many servers on at a given shift?
Typically anywhere from a 10 to a 15 floor in the dining room, and the bar anywhere from a 2 to a 6 floor.
Huh.
Depends upon the time of the week, time of the year.
Right.
But yeah, no, we're probably averaging about 100,000. My store did 5.4 million last year, my particular unit that I'm at. Yeah, no, we're high volume, definitely. That's why I got staying organized. I guess, I don't know if I shared this with Bill, one of the things that paid off for me, I think, is my Vietnam experience, in that you learned to see that if things are out of place, even a little bit, be careful. So when you're out in the station, you're always looking for something out of place, something they're going to need, something they just moved, something they just ran out of, something you know they're going to ask you for. But that's part of the excitement, always under attack.
Yeah.
Like, I love it at the peak of the rush when, you know how chaotic everything sounds. It always reminds me of the stock market. It's basically the same thing, all that noise and we're making money.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
Sure.
That's
yes,
terrific.
Please.
I just have one question for you.
Yes.
From a manager's perspective, is there any one thing about the managers that you've worked with that have had a positive influence on you?
You know, I think there was one manager who I worked with, one of the best managers I ever worked with. And do you guys know who Jim Sullivan is?
Yeah, we do.
Yes. Jim Sullivan has... Sorry, Bill, but I got to throw this out.
Yeah, okay.
Jim Sullivan talks about being a blowtorch for the shift. And I'm telling you, that's what this fellow was like. He would come in and he would light the joint up. He didn't walk in like, oh, yeah, here we go. He came in, how you doing? What we got happening? He's, you know, checking names and lists and what do we got here? Saying hello to every person that walks in the restaurant. Every one of the employees. How you doing? What's up? You know about this? You're on time? Yes, great. You've got to be on the floor. How's your uniform? I mean, this guy was nonstop, but he was so full of energy. Just one of the, and he was the kind of guy that he wanted to work with you. You definitely had to pay attention to what he was trying to do and make it happen, because he'd be on your case if he missed.
Yeah.
But he really walked into the place and he lit it up with enthusiasm. And that's part of, I mean, I think from a manager perspective, your tools are now your staff. And that's who's going to get the job done. It goes back to that wine thing. Manager's not going to run out to the table and tell you guests what the wines are. It's going to take the employee's got to know that, but the manager's got to make sure that the employee understands that and does pronounce the wine correctly. Does that help you?
Yeah, that does.
Yeah, no, it boils down to, with all the hard work, we sell fun. That's all we do is we sell fun. And you got to have a manager, you got to have leaders out there that are going to just throw gasoline on the fire.
So as far as leaders, I mean, besides being a ball of fire, is there any other leadership skill that you've noticed among effective managers?
I don't know how much turnover you folks have in your staff. I'll tell you, one of the things that which kind of sets new people off in a bad direction is when you hire somebody new in and they don't stage their training. And the training could be formal or informal. Oops, can you hold on just a second?
Oh, hi.
Come on in just a second. But when we do that, then what we don't set them up effectively, what happens then is these folks... it's like when they interview with us, oh, yeah, we're an organized company, and here's your training material, et cetera. And then when they show up, they're standing around, and they're shy, and they're nervous, and they're looking around, and then they get introduced to Paul, the trainer, by the manager, and the trainer goes, well, what's this? I didn't know we were training somebody today. So it starts off that, because you got to keep yourself organized, and I think managers need to have a lot to do with keeping that organized.
Keeping organized.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a big ship. There's a lot of things to remember. Any other questions?
Does anybody think we've covered it?
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you guys taking so much time with me today. Have a good shift tonight.
Thank you very much.
You know, if you get on the internet, go ahead and feel free to drop me a note about our little visit today. Love to hear from you.
All right.
Great. Thank
you
very much.
Thank you all for calling in, and I'll see you the next time I'm on the Cape.
Thanks, Bill.
All right.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
Bye, bye, folks.
And Paul, thank you too. I appreciate
Bill, thank you very much. I'll be in touch with you.
Okay, buddy.
All right, take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.